Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, guys, welcome to Martinis and Murder. Ooh, you had such a nice little murder there, and I really went deep baritone with it.
I'm still fighting off, you know me more than anybody, and we've done so much talking to each other over the years that it's that time of the year where...
You eat too much turkey and you're still full?
Absolutely, okay. That, which, by the way, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I hope you guys did too.
It's that time of the year where my sinuses go crazy. The other day, it was Friday, I had an event to go to, and the temperature dropped like 20 degrees in like a few hours. And by the time we got to our event, I was outside without a coat on, and it was 29 degrees in New York City. I should not be living in New York. My body is not accustomed to this New England weather.
You need to be living like my 90-year-old Jewish grandfather in Boca Raton, Florida.
I was just going to say, my ideal...
Playing Mahjong on the golf course with all of his biddies.
When I think about my life for 30 to 40 to 50 years, it's very much Blanche Devereaux from
yes.
the Golden Girls.
On your lanai.
Out on the lanai.
Absolutely.
In Miami. Just enjoying life in the humid, warm weather.
With Sophia Petrillo.
Absolutely.
Yelling at you.
Obviously.
I'm so happy you're such a fan of Golden Girls like I am.
Oh, look, I'm gay. Of course I am.
Well, obviously. Yeah, everybody. That's in the DNA.
I know.
All right, well, Thanksgiving hangover is a real thing.
That's true.
But I want to know what we're drinking today. Because I, you have a different shelf for different things. You have a food shelf. Then, like, when you're full from food, you still have a dessert shelf.
Right,
we
yes.
have, like, a martini shelf where, like, yes, we're filled with food, but we can still have a few cocktails.
Absolutely. And if there's one time to do it, it's right now on the show.
Yeah. And, Matt, I'm going to be honest with you. John and I are not thankful for you at all. But thankful that you allow us to drink at work.
Absolutely.
And make martinis without saying a word. So.
You just use me.
I mean, thank you. Used.
Well, this drink is part two of what we had mentioned on last week's episode,
yes.
where we were spent 15 emails debating what we
this
would drink
last week.
This was
part of that email chain.
So this drink this week could have been last week's episode. This is a little, behind the scenes for you guys.
It was very close.
Very close.
It was a very close
Very
call.
Close. But Matt, tell us what we're up to this week.
We're having a pumpkin martini.
Ooh.
We thought that everyone's having Thanksgiving leftovers.
Right.
Yes.
Pumpkin pie, maybe.
Pumpkin pie. And in fact, I would suggest if you have pumpkin pie left over, just grab some with your hand and just throw it in the drink.
Yeah.
It's going to be so good.
That's
it
true.
It could be accoutrement on the rim of the martini.
That's true.
Okay.
Smear it around the rim.
Ew, don't say smear. No, you're fired now. That's inappropriate.
We're going to ban that word smear, from our
ow.
Show starting right now.
That is... You guys are so dirty. I can't believe it. That was just an innocent thing that I said.
No, it's not innocent.
I guess actually smear and rim in the same
okay.
Quick, change the subject. Quick, make our drinks.
It better not be called a smearing rim martini, otherwise I'm out. I'm quitting.
Before anyone throws up, I do want to mention...
Matt's your boss.
Matt's my boss, but also that I just recently had my first piece of pumpkin pie before Thanksgiving. So I just want to say we're in the season...
Are you a communist?
Yeah, are you living under a rock?
No, it's just like, it's weird. I live in an area of Brooklyn where like you don't see pumpkin pies at the grocery store.
Yeah, but like you haven't, you grow up in Brooklyn. How did you never have a fucking piece of pumpkin pie?
Okay, you're both giving me looks right now.
I
feel
understand.
Attacked.
Is
I feel
a spy?
Oh, no, sorry. I don't
is
mean my first
agent
ever.
Of Castro?
No, I first from like, last week's episode. It wasn't my first ever piece of pumpkin pie.
Oh,
I meant for the season.
Oh. Well,
calm down,
clarify.
Everybody. Calm down.
Clarify.
I tried to, but you started attacking me.
I had my first slice. Thank you.
I was before. I tried to say of the season,
you know
but I
now
was attacked.
Now you're on my shit list.
Not
it's
a good point, John.
Attacked.
Not a good point.
By the way,
I feel like it's like the orange peel, except it's words this time. Okay?
That's like being like I woke up for the first time ever. Today it's like
we're
you've
moving
never
on.
Woken up like
the listeners want to move on from this and I feel very attacked.
Do they? Because and I feel very comfortable.
Maybe I quit. Maybe I quit. I think I walked out of last week's episode.
I'm very upset with you, John.
So
okay,
you go.
Matt's
gonna
us
work
what's
on
in our first ever
pumpkin martini. The first time John has ever tasted a pumpkin pie.
Oh my God.
Pumpkin anything.
So
pumpkins are
you.
Orange and they're in Halloween.
That's
John.
True.
Yeah, it's
that's
one
true.
1.5 ounce cream liqueur, 2 ounces of vanilla vodka, 1.5 ounce of pumpkin liqueur, or you can use pumpkin spice syrup, whipped cream, which we're not having because I can't, it's just, I'm sorry.
I love whipped
it's
cream,
too,
but I get it.
Too much. a cinnamon stick for garnish.
He's the bartender, so.
And that's it.
Awesome. Well, my voice is a little dry, so the quicker
that's
you get that...
That's because you're fucking lying and
because
saying...
Because I was screaming and
like
defending myself,
sure.
Okay?
Sure. Let's get into the fucking
yes,
podcast.
Yes, Matt's going to be working on our pumpkin, my first ever pumpkin taste, and
I
we're
hope the fans
in.
Shit on you all for saying
no,
that.
No, if
you
anything, they should
it.
Come to my defense because I wasn't even able to finish my sentence
sure.
because I was attacked.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Let's
Who
start this week's show.
Is Clara Jean Schwartz.
Yeah.
Born in 1982, Clara grew up on her family's farm in rural Loudoun County in Virginia. Is it Loudoun?
It's Loudoun, yeah.
Okay. In rural Loudoun County in Virginia. She had a nice house with a pool and a pasture with horses.
Mm.
Wow, that looks nice. Despite the comfortable home, she had a challenging childhood, however. She was the youngest of three kids. Her mother was actually diagnosed with terminal cancer when Clara was 10 and actually passed away 5 years later. So she was only 15 when her mother passed away. That's...
Not
obviously heartbreaking no matter what age, but at 15, anything,
tough, yeah.
You know, when you're still living at home and relying on your parents. Her right. father, Bob Schwartz, who was a well-known biophysicist, attempted to ease Clara's pain by getting her a horse, but failed to bring her out of her grief.
Are there well-known biophysicists out there? Like, how many well-known biophysicists do you know?
Well, they're definitely world-known. Like
in their industry or whatever?
Not by us, because
yeah,
we're,
by
like,
us.
Dumb. Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
We're not biophysicists.
A prosecutor actually told Snap she listened to a lot of Marilyn Manson, wore a lot of black, that kind of thing. Shockingly, I'm wearing all black today, too, so I relate, Clara.
For the most part, I am, too. I have a gray sweater,
girl.
Though.
I think you'd be in with her posse.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Friends.
Yeah.
I like Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, I don't
terrifies
have a
problem. Me, but I like
yeah.
him. She filled her time playing Dungeons and Dragons and going to Renaissance fairs. Have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons? I know Magic was very popular when we were kids.
I was
but
just going to say
I never played D&D.
Never got into D&D. I did have Megan, our producer, tech producer,
eyes lighting up.
No, I'm aware of D&D. I love Stranger Things, which D&D is
and
around.
And they play D&D
yep.
in that. Okay.
And definitely, I think our age group was more into Magic the Gathering, and I never really got into that
either.
Were they
out at the same time? They were. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
you were either like a Magic kid or a D&D
well,
kid?
Well, D&D was like 80s, and then Magic came around, I'm guessing, a little bit later
in the
80s.
Like in the 90s, Magic
no,
was
Megan
around.
Saying Magic just seemed more
were
popular.
Were you a Magic person, Megan, or just D&D?
Oh, she's saying both. Okay.
Little bisexual with yeah. her card games.
Also, I do want to mention really quick yeah, at the top of this show, the Renaissance fairs, this all takes Renaissance fairs. All of this takes place in the Maryland, Virginia area, and I know the exact Renaissance fair they're talking about.
Have
because
you ever been?
I haven't been personally, but like all of my friends from Maryland have been to the Renaissance fair. It's like one of those things you go, you dress up in old-timey clothes.
Love it.
You eat a turkey leg, and you live your best life there.
Well, she was living her her best life for sure. Actually, the prosecutor explained she was kind of one of those, you know, fringe kids, you know, sitting in the corner of the cafeteria. She didn't have a whole lot of friends.
And I resent the stereotyping. I just want to put that out there now.
I sat in the corner of my cafeteria.
I was just going to say that. I'm like, look, not everybody that plays Dungeons and Dragons and likes to, you know, go to the Renaissance Fair is necessarily troubled. So.
They're just painting a picture for us.
Precisely.
By the time Clara became a freshman in high school, she clearly stood out. Meanwhile, her older sister, Michelle, was an incredibly popular junior in school, and her recently graduated older brother was very outgoing. It's very hard to have siblings in the same school as you are, like
Definitely.
At the same time. I was a freshman when my brother was a senior, and my brother was very shy, and I was very outgoing, and so it was always like, Darren, don't be around me because you're gonna, you know.
Yeah.
People would always think he's my younger brother. It was bad. I really enjoy a stiff cocktail mixed with the sweat and tears of our producer, Matt.
Oh, I know. But I also love a nice bottle of wine.
You're so right. I love me some wine.
Totally. But Darren, I have a confession to make. I am so overwhelmed by the choices in the store. I read one description the other day that described a bottle of Chardonnay as angular. What the hell is angular Chardonnay supposed to taste like?
Yeah, that just sounds unpleasant to me.
I know. I ended up just choosing the bottle with the best looking label.
John, you poor thing. We've all been there. But don't waste my time listening to snooty wine critics. How do they even know what you'll like? I'm honestly over the pretentious babble of all the wine reviews next to each bottle.
Me too. I don't care if it's angular or opulent. I just want to know if it tastes good.
Well, John, there's a safe place for you to find wine you like. It's First Leaf Wine Club, the only wine club based on your taste.
This seems promising, but how do they know what I like?
Well, it's all about the algorithms. They listen to what you say you like. You customize your order by selecting the color, wine regions, and frequency of your wine shipments. First Leaf creates your first 3-pack of wine, and we're not talking cheap swill here like the stuff Matt has us drink. Many of First Leaf's wine are gold medal winners and elite members of the $20 or more club. When you finish a bottle of wine from First Leaf, review it online. First Leaf develops an algorithm around your wine preferences according to your feedback and selects new wines they think you'll like based on your unique tastes and preferences.
So the more wine I drink, the better the recommendations?
Exactly.
Yeah, Matt, I'm going to need the afternoon off. I have a lot of research to do.
To order your 3-pack of introductory wine for $15, go to tryfirstleaf.com/martinis. That's 3 bottles of wine for only $15 at tryfirstleaf.com/martinis. Experience First Leaf today at tryfirstleaf.com/martinis. So the success of her older siblings was challenging to live up to for Clara. As we said, it's very complicated, and you're always comparing yourself to your siblings.
Yeah.
However, she did connect with a few like-minded kids she became friends with. There we go.
There's that pumpkin.
Page in and I'm perched. She became friends with Katie Inglis, a shy girl in school, and her boyfriend, Michael Full. And I think it's pronounced Full, but it's P-F-O-L-H.
I had a friend in college whose last name was this, and he pronounced it Full.
Okay, so I'm going to go with that.
You're right, yeah.
Listeners, please call us and tell me
I'm
dumb.
Names are tough because unless you know them, how do you really know how to say it?
Exactly. The three friends would spend hours together hanging out and playing role-playing games. Clara even invented a game she called The Underworld, which is so Stranger Things I can't get. It's like upside down, but it's still the same thing. Her title was Lord Chaos, and everyone had to answer to her.
Sounds like Matt.
My reality. No, it sounds like my reality. Her father, Bob,
you are Lord Chaos.
I am.
Yes.
Her father, Bob, was supportive of her darker outlook and passions. But when she became a freshman at James Madison University in 2000 and her grades plummeted, her father took notice. The prosecutor actually said, her dad's a PhD. Obviously, education is something that is very highly valued in their family. She was feeling a lot of pressure to do well in school, and she didn't want to go to college anymore. I think she just wanted to be left alone. Clara spent much of her time on campus developing her Underworld game and recruiting new players to play with her. She recruited a boy named Patrick House and dated him, actually, very briefly. The prosecutor said he believed in dragons. He believed that dragons did, in fact, walk the earth, I think, during the times of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table.
And I'm not really seeing the problem here.
Is that a red flag or no?
I don't know, because I love dragons.
Me too.
I believe they're real.
Okay.
I believe I belong at Hogwarts, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not really seeing the issue at all.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
No, that's fair.
Let's keep going.
After a few months of dating, the couple actually broke up and Clara started dating 18-year-old sex vixen Kyle Hubbard. I just added that
that's
in.
Your,
there's a little
yeah,
effect.
That's your
yeah,
little
yeah,
part
yeah.
there.
Kyle Hubbard.
Yeah, so let's talk about Kyle Hubbard, as he's a very important part of the story as well. Kyle's interests were based around vampires, goths, swords, and role-playing games, pretty typical for one of Claire's friends. Kyle was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. He had been a ward of the state since age 6 and moved through many foster homes and mental institutions. After being discharged from the state from state care when he turned 18 in 2001, he spent the next several weeks homeless. An attorney told Snapped, "I don't think Kyle ever really had a sense that he had any kind of pillow under his head from one night to the next. I think for him, it was just kind of going from one day to the next, trying to figure out where he's going to be." It's so sad.
It's really sad.
He eventually was able to find a home thanks to the generosity of his friend Sean and his father, Francis. They described him as harmless and hardworking, cleaning and doing chores around the house. Francis, his friend's father, said he tried to get jobs, but once you take and fill out an application and tell a person you've been in a mental institution and you're on certain types of medications and stuff, they're not going to hire you.
This makes my heart break for this kid.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And I think, you know, one of the things I wanted to point out in this episode, not to be like super serious on y'all's asses, but, yeah. you know, there's a big stigma around mental health. You know, I feel like we're just now as a society here in the United States getting around to maybe kind of starting to understand it, or at least being open to it.
Agreed.
And I hope that as a society, we can do better to understand the importance of mental health. I mean, we've seen how...
Especially in our prison system, because
totally.
You see a lot of mentally health, you know, mentally...
Ill people
yeah. there, and it's not the place where they need to be, and it's not going to help them.
You're right, exactly. So I do want to point that out, because I think mental health is a very serious issue.
That's a good point.
Yes, thank you. Take a drink if you're playing our drinking game. Without being able to get work, Kyle focused on fantasy to fill his mind, which I have to say, there's just something... I don't want to say I empathize with him. We'll get into what happened for the rest of the show, but you kind of just feel like, you know, think about the circumstances he was given. All he can do is play games and fill his mind with this fantasy stuff. You know, it's
he just
tough.
Wants to be, you know, hardworking and get
exactly.
a job and contribute to society. So
right, and we're getting our pumpkin drinks here. It looks like Matt's finally getting to them. My voice is
finally.
A little dry.
He's finally getting.
You're gonna get really deep.
Thank
voices
you.
Here in a minute. These are even
like
a pumpkin-y.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like...
I do have a little bit of... Go ahead.
No, it looks
what?
Like a creamsicle color.
That's
right?
True. I do have a little bit of PTSD when it comes to orange-related things.
We'll see if he can survive this one.
Yeah,
I know, it's going to be
the
fine.
Orange peel.
I don't think there's a garnish, so we should be okay.
That's true.
Are you drinking today, Matt?
Yeah, but I have a little grievance to air first.
Go ahead.
Which is... We needed the cream liqueur.
Yeah. Oh.
I went into my cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to have to say the name of the brand Bailey's, John's favorite drink.
Love
you
it.
Know, we have a huge bottle and it's almost gone.
That's
and
weird.
And you know, I've worked from home a couple times
yeah,
lately.
Yeah.
That's weird.
And
yeah.
snooze you lose.
Yeah.
Cats away, mice will play.
Strange
I mean,
that the Bailey's is almost gone out of my liquor cabinet.
That is weird.
All I'm going to say is that, as Darren just mentioned, when the cat's away, the mice will play,
and
whether
the
there's
mice.
A show or not.
We're the
and
mice.
Maybe we're the mice. Yep.
Let's cheers, guys.
Cheers, bitch, to
cheers,
a pumpkin
Thank you for
spice
this.
Martini.
Happy belated Thanksgiving.
Let me take a quick sip. That's really good.
That's super good.
It
super
is the perfect.
Good.
You know what? I don't even taste too much spice in this,
me
so
neither.
I'm going to go out and, on a limb and rename this to... Pumpkin pie martini.
Very good.
What do you think, Matt? You're the bartender.
I think
okay?
that's, do you know what pumpkin pie tastes like?
Yes, I do. As of
okay.
allegedly.
Did you
as
put it in your memory? Because I know you only had it once.
Yes, I did.
Okay,
I'm good.
Good.
From what I remember from my first
good.
Piece.
It was
yeah,
good.
It was good.
Okay.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery. Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else.
As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Anyway, moving on from that whole scenario, as we mentioned, Kyle would regularly meet with friends for Dungeons and Dragons. Another hobby was playing with knives. Oh, interesting. Matt likes knives, as you can see on his Instagram account, by the way, which definitely. Every other post he's holding a knife.
Poking at me. Yes.
Right. Oh, that's true. You almost got murdered a couple weeks ago. Kyle met Clara at the Renaissance Fair. As I mentioned, I'm familiar with this, although I've never been there. The prosecutor said, quote, Clara went to the Renaissance Fair with Katie and Mike and saw Kyle there. He was wearing all black, a cat mask, and I think he had a cape on. Clara went over and started talking to him and then came over and introduced him to the group. And when she introduced him, she said, this is Kyle and he's an assassin.
He's wearing a cat mask. I'm swooning.
Well, the only cat mask assassin that I want to know is Catwoman.
Ooh, me too.
Selena Kyle. Ooh, you have
Michelle
a thing for her?
Michelle Pfeiffer. Get out of here.
By far the best Catwoman.
100%.
Yeah, 100%. Clara and her friend group instantly accepted him, and a few weeks later, all of them drove to James Madison University to visit Clara in her dorm. Kyle and Clara were, quote, just friends, but that didn't stop Clara from buying Kyle a sword as a present. Kyle carried it around for the weeks, and Megan's covering her face here, and I'm like,
I don't know why.
Okay, he plays with knives.
Yep.
He's got a little bit of mental illness that
sure.
we are aware of, and now he owns a sword, so I don't know that this is going to end well. Just spoiler
alert.
Should
we get a sword for Matt for Christmas?
No. Okay. No, no, no. We definitely should not.
That's just
do
me
that.
Thinking. That's me thinking.
Although I did receive a message from someone saying they have special knives for me.
Oh,
don't send them to us.
That's good. Good thing the lawyer's on the line. She's documenting yeah, everything that's happening.
That's true.
Right,
she's
now
recording the episode. So 2 months after they met, Kyle even came home with Clara for Thanksgiving break. Very obviously, what's the word for happening now? We just got back from Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's
what's
true.
The word I'm thinking? Poignant? What is
it's very
that?
Appropriate.
Current. Yeah, all these work. Sorry, I'm blanking. I'm drunk. One day, Kyle's friend Francis, which I'm guessing is not the guy's father.
No.
Okay, so
this
another
is
Francis.
A friend.
Got it.
His.
Yes.
So another Francis wanted to see his sword, which if I could tell you, if I had a nickel for every time someone asked if they could see the sword, I wouldn't be that rich. No. Upon checking it out, he realized it had no edge to it. Kyle's friend Francis said, one particular day, I asked him to see it, and he let me have it, and I found that it had no edge on it. And with me being a hunter, and my son too, a knife without an edge don't work. I took that knife, and over a couple of days, had an edge on it that was so close to what a ninja sword would be, it was sharp.
Okay.
This isn't going the way
Listen,
I think.
A sword is a sword. Like, he needs to have an edge. Like,
you know.
Whatever.
Otherwise, what is it? It's not a sword. It's a butter knife.
Yeah,
something.
Exactly. Yeah. Martinis and Murder is brought to you by Rockstar Games and L.A. Noire, the dark detective crime thriller set among the violence, glamour, and corruption of 1940s Los Angeles.
Out now for Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, and PS4, L.A. Noire allows you to scour crime scenes, pick up and examine objects, interrogate witnesses, and determine who is telling the truth or lying to cover up a brutal murder.
Ooh, solve crimes inspired by real cases from one of L.A.'s most violent decades.
L.A. Noire from Rockstar Games, out now rated M for mature.
Order now at rockstargames.com/LA Noir. On December 10th, 2001, a colleague of Bob Schwartz called his friend with an urgent matter. Bob's friend said, I got a call saying, you know, Bob's not showing up for work. He was very punctual and there was a meeting that he was supposed to be at. And she was wondering if I could go to his home and check on him. It would probably take me a good 30 minutes, 40 minutes to get there. And so I said, well, instead of that, I'll call a neighbor. So he called the neighbor telling him there's a little problem and if he could drop by Bob's house just to check on him. The neighbor agreed and headed over there pretty immediately.
Yeah.
Bob's place was an old stone and log house tucked into a wooded hollow. A mile of dirt road leads up to the home and it can be very difficult to drive on. On this day, it had rained and made the driveway incredibly muddy. After some struggle and using four-wheel drive, the neighbor finally made it to the home. He went into the home and found Bob on his stomach in the kitchen in front of the sink.
Yeah.
Bob was covered in stab wounds.
Oh, my God.
The neighbor says, I shut the door, went back to the car, picked up my cell phone, and I called 911. And, you know, as I'm reading this quote, I'm thinking, like, did you ever see The Night Of on HBO?
I don't think so.
I did.
So I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, but essentially, you know, it's kind of he sort of gets framed for this murder that, you know, he didn't commit, but he makes all these sort of series of mistakes of like touching things and checking on the dead body. And so he could kind of be culpable of it. And I'm thinking this neighbor just shutting the door. That's what I would have done, too. It's like, oops, well, slip back out.
We've talked recently about how DNA being in a scene doesn't necessarily mean. Yeah,
100%. So due to the remoteness and tough roads, it was a lengthy wait for the police to arrive at the scene. Investigators found clues as to what had happened. There were no fingerprints. There were no missing items, so it doesn't seem like it's a robbery. Mm-hmm. There was no obvious motive for such a violent attack. The prosecutor said some of the furniture had been disturbed, and so it appeared that there had been a struggle. The killer appeared to have continued stabbing Bob even after he was down.
Ugh.
Actually, a few of the stabs went through him all the way into the floor. Full strength here to do that.
There are a lot of details that we've talked about on the show that have stuck with me, and this is one of them. Like,
yeah.
The idea of something penetrating somebody so hard that it goes through to the floor.
Definitely.
It's just, you don't think about that stuff. It's crazy.
Well, after the crime scene, technicians finished their work. Authorities contacted the next of kin, which were his children. He has three of them.
Yeah.
The police went to James Madison University to tell Clara and her older sister. Her older sister just took the news so hard, as one might expect. The prosecutor said Michelle was very distraught. They had already lost their mother, and now they had lost their father, too.
Mm.
However, Clara had a much more muted response. She wasn't upset, said the prosecutor. She wasn't crying. Her only question was, how?
Yeah, that's definitely very interesting.
Which is quite disturbing if that's the first thing that you say after your dad dies.
Well, let's get into the investigation. So at the crime scene, investigators continued to find little answers and widened their search to the neighbors to see if they had witnessed anything out of the ordinary. One neighbor said a young man had come to their residence less than 48 hours before Bob was killed. He said his name was Kyle and his car had gotten stuck in the mud.
Okay.
Yeah, so that muddy driveway is an important fact here. Kyle politely asked to use their phone and came in to call a tow truck. Investigators then called the towing company and tracked down the car in a lot, but it wasn't Kyle's car. The car belonged to Clara's longtime friend, Michael Fole. When the tow truck driver spoke to police, he said there was not one but three people waiting for him to pull the car from the mud: Kyle, Michael, and Michael's girlfriend, Katie. The following morning, Michael and Katie were picked up by police at his parents' house. They searched the home, and in the basement, they found Kyle's samurai sword. It had been washed and was actually still wet when they pulled it out. They also found Kyle, but since he was staying at a friend's house across the river in Maryland, they couldn't bring him in until they worked with the local authorities.
Of course, because of state lines.
Right, state lines, exactly. At the station, Katie and Michael were cooperative and told police that Kyle had spent the weekend with them. Kyle then asked them for a ride, telling them, quote, he had a job to do. The prosecutor says what they understood that to mean, because of course he was an assassin, was that he had to assassinate somebody, which...
This is all, it's sort of... You know, mixing worlds here, what's real and what's not, and her game about the underworld. Like, it's all very blurred lines here.
Definitely. Michael and Katie then drove Kyle out to Clara's father's house. An attorney told Snapped, these kids were so involved with this goth fantasy, and it was almost like this was an extension. According to Michael and Katie, they dropped Kyle off a few hundred yards from the house. The prosecutor said they knew that he had a sword when he left that car to go up to the house. He took that sword and stuck it down the back of his coat. They said he had returned about 30 minutes later and were very transparent with their story. Instead of worrying about what Kyle had done, though, they had turned their car around and gotten completely stuck in the mud. Kyle returned to the car, and all three of them tried to get it out with little success. They decided to call a tow truck. Kyle decided he would go next door and ask for one. After getting towed back, Michael and Katie went home, and Kyle got a ride to Maryland. An attorney said Kyle gave the sword to Michael Fole to hold on to until they could come up with some kind of way to get rid of that piece of evidence. The disillusion of their actions was apparent. It seemed as if they thought it was all part of a role-playing fantasy game. Michael even called the whole situation, quote, a big oopsie. Oh.
Oh.
You know, I just have to say, listening to you talk about this crime scene,
yeah,
this particular murder has to be the dumbest that we have ever covered. I mean,
I think that's accurate.
They're not even trying to, you know, I mean, yeah, steal a couple things. So
right,
it looks like a robbery. You know, most people think of some kind of...
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
No, definitely.
I mean, and then also that it's muddy, their tire tracks, the,
right,
the tire...
I hadn't even thought of that.
You know, and then call a tow truck? What?
Yeah, yeah, that doesn't...
What? Put you at the
and he's
scene
so casually being like, we're just going to go into the neighbors and
yeah,
call a tow.
Knock on the neighbor's door. Yeah.
Dan,
your wife is here. You know, we've talked about this a couple of times. It's like some of these criminals just don't seem to understand that there are ramifications about this stuff. You're not smart.
But especially with this one, it doesn't even sound like
they're not even trying to hide
that's
it.
True.
Not only are they trying to hide it, but it doesn't even sound like they really comprehend that anything went down that was bad.
Right.
You know, like they're like in a game, he's an assassin, this all sort of, you know, fits. He's a fucking sword in his fucking coat. Like,
yeah,
no one's saying anything. It's like reality.
Yeah, no,
I
know. Well, the couple was not arrested that night, and they were released. So.
All right, so the investigation obviously continues, and by Tuesday afternoon on December 11th, 2001, where were you?
December 11th, that was my freshman year of high school. So I was probably, yeah, in school, because I don't think we had gotten out for Christmas break yet.
Was I in eighth grade?
I think you're
a
year behind
grade.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in eighth grade. So by December 11th, 2001, it seemed as if investigators thought they'd pretty much solved the murder of Bob Schwartz. Authorities focused on arresting Kyle in Maryland that evening. An attorney said they did what's called a felony takedown. Get out of the car, get down, get your hands up, and everybody yelling and hollering.
Somebody's drunk.
Matt, don't fucking laugh. Kyle did not resist arrest, and he did not deny killing Bob either, claiming it was entirely justified. This is my point. Like, he thinks he's right, you know?
Well, remember,
someone is going to send us a t-shirt or a cup.
Says yellering.
Or glasses as hashtag yellering.
I hope so. Please,
I like that.
Please,
yellering.
Someone make us yellering. Old yellering.
Old yellering.
The prosecutor says Kyle felt that he was the prosecutor. I'm drunk.
Yeah. Take a second here. Take a sip.
The prosecutor says, quote, Kyle felt that he was the protector of Clara Schwartz and indicated that she was actually abused. Mm. So according to the Chicago Tribune, testimony and court documents say Clara Schwartz told friends that her father had poisoned her food. Remember, she had a rough relationship with him. Once her grades started failing, he was not happy with that.
Right.
Kyle apparently thought of himself as a hero. He confirmed Michael and Katie's story about what had happened and that he went into the home by himself. According to the Washington Post, Kyle wrote in a statement to police that Clara's dad was planning a family trip to the Virgin Islands and wanted to make sure, quote, she did not come back. He also wrote that his otherworldly companions, vampires and creatures named Orodog, Saba, and Nicodemus, then gave him permission to kill Clara's dad.
What are we doing? Like,
can
what
we call
is
Matt
this
Nicodemus?
Show? Yeah, Nicodemus. That's Matt's name the rest of the show.
I wanted to call him Detritus, but whatever.
Right.
Nicodemus is better.
Yeah, this one's fun.
His attorney told Snapped, Kyle was going into this house on a dark and stormy night to avenge the wrong that had been done to the fair maiden. When Bob opened the door, Kyle repeatedly stabbed him with that sword. I feel like we're in Zelda.
It's like, yeah, no. And it's like, did an attorney really say fair maiden? Like, what is going on? This world is crazy.
But
is this
the
Legend of Zelda, as you just said?
That's what it feels like. Kyle made reference to going into a vampire frenzy when he tasted blood. That night, he was booked on murder charges. Michael and Katie were booked for murder the next day. Obviously, these were all Clara's friends. Investigators had been hinted in her direction. After the murder, Kyle said he called Clara to tell her the job was done. But did Clara have anything to do with this, or was it a fantasy in Kyle's head?
And this is an interesting point at this point in this case, because don't you think it's interesting that Kyle then called Clara and was like, by the way, the job's done. It made me think that she was in on this in some capacity.
Because I would be like, what job?
What job? Exactly. Oh my God, what? That's crazy. My dad's dead?
The police made a number of trips down to her college, but she was never available. The investigators were not able to interview her until December 20th, immediately after her father's funeral. She was unemotional, but investigators got the sense that's how she was most of the time.
Yeah.
During the interrogation, she admitted Kyle and Michael had called her the night of the murder and told her what they'd done. But during interrogation, Clara said, I didn't believe them. I thought they were joking. Seems convenient.
Right.
She also talked about having a troubled relationship with her dad. She said, my dad didn't like me very much. I got the impression that he rather hated me because, you know, he wanted me to be like Michelle, or he wanted me to be popular, be normal. And I don't want to be normal. Normal is rather boring. Well, I agree. But still, investigators learned that her dad was very frustrated with her for performing poorly in school. Quote, he didn't want me to get low grades, she said. He thought for him, C's were like F's. I might as well bring home an F. Clara claimed that when her father was displeased, he was verbally and even physically abusive to her. She said, if dad hurt me a couple of days later, he'd be like, I'm sorry I hit you. You know, that kind of thing. Just awful.
Troubling, yeah.
Clara told investigators she told Kyle about her father's abuse, but said she didn't ask him to kill her father. However, she did claim that Kyle had brought up the idea of killing him on several occasions.
Red flag number like 9,000 this week's episode.
Clara actually said when he started mentioning that kind of stuff about it is when I started going, no, I'm not getting involved. This is just starting to sound crazy. I don't believe you. I'm not getting involved. How about telling him that you shouldn't be killing your own
dad? Yeah.
Kyle's talk was so crazy, Clara didn't think he was even serious. He, quote, he seemed like a person who could just talk about that stuff, but didn't really do it.
And like, to give benefit to the doubt here, it's like, we've all been like, I'm going to kill you as a joke. I mean, we hear it from Matt every day.
Of course.
So, but
is
Matt a killer? Tune in next week. Maybe he is.
Conspiracy theories,
that's true.
Abound.
And we also don't know if she's being honest at all.
That's exactly. I was just going to say that.
We don't know if she's being honest. They're role playing a lot. Right. You know, if she believed him in the role playing game, but not in real life, does that count? You know, what's reality here and what isn't?
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What if he had been serious, the investigators asked. I would have called, she said. If I had believed him, I'm almost positive I would have called the campus police. Also another convenient statement to make.
Also interesting she'd called campus police.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The police released Clara as she didn't appear to be a co-conspirator. 2 months after Bob's murder, investigators returned to Clara's college carrying a search warrant. They seized the computer from her dorm to view any communications on it. Clara had been saving chats with all of her friends, so it was really easy to find. Never save chats, people. The chats with Kyle were incredibly damning. Police arrested Clara that afternoon. She was charged with one count of first-degree murder and one count of conspiracy to commit murder.
Wow.
An attorney told Snap, quote, Clara was very much involved in this. Clara was very much the organizer and the manipulator here and the puppet master.
And I immediately thought, yeah, somebody who creates their own board game probably has a hand in this
Lord
kind of situation.
Chaos.
When everybody else around her, yeah, exactly. When everyone else around her is kind of contributing, you have to think it's very likely
totally.
That she was. Let's get to the trial. So Clara had been held for 8 months without bond and was ready to stand trial, which began on October 7th, 2002. Remember where you were, 2002?
Starting my freshman year of college, like a new buck in the world.
The prosecutor said, quote, there was a concern that if she was released on a bond that she, number one, might not appear either because she had done some harm to herself or others or that she simply fled. Kyle and Michael were also in jail awaiting trial, but Katie was out on bail. According to Snap, she pleaded guilty to one count of accessory after the fact and made a deal, agreeing to testify against her friends and boyfriend. While prosecutors had Kyle's confession and Clara's instant messages, Michael's attorney told Snap, quote, they needed somebody from the inside. Confession by itself is not enough without some corroboration, and that was Katie's role. Michael and Kyle's roles were quite clear, but the jury now had to determine Clara's role. The prosecutor didn't just present abuse as the motive and said there was also evidence of the fact that Clara has discussed the inheritance selling the house. We've talked about this a couple of times. Inheritances and, you know, life insurance policies are often motivators.
Good point, John.
Thank you. Yes. Take a drink.
Take a drink.
She talked about how much her father's house was worth and how she would inherit it if he died, which was about $400,000.
Never talk about that.
No.
Like, poor taste, people.
No. The prosecutor said the defense theory was that Clara was just a poor victim in all of this and that she had poured out her heart, to Kyle Hulbert about the problem that she was having, that she was being abused. The defense claimed Kyle's bipolar imagination had taken Clara's instant messages wishing her father was dead and extrapolated them into
just as drunk as me.
I know, it's like it's late in the day. Extrapolated them into a quote job. So which was it? The next day, the prosecutors called Clara's former boyfriend to the stand. He testified how he dated her before Kyle and they both loved gothic role-playing games, including her game Underworld, which, by the way, frankly, I would love to get a copy of that.
Yeah, I'm like, do you
want to play it on the episode? Why not? In her game, Clara wanted her ex to kill her father, he said. He didn't think she was serious. After all, it was her game that was made up. So this is a little bit
also
crazy.
Dark.
Yeah. And also to incorporate a whole point of a game, which is for your ex to kill your father, is a little bit out there.
It feels very American Beauty to me, if you've ever seen
that. Yes, I have. And that's true. And I also think, again, with all the red flags we've been given, this is yet another one. Darren, does it feel like wedding season has been extended lately to include the entire year?
Completely. I had back-to-back-to-back weddings the last 3 weekends in a row. It's November. Get the memo, happy couples.
Right? I also feel like couples are registered on way too many different sites. Do I put money towards their scuba diving trip in the Bahamas for the shower gift and hope it doesn't lead to a disastrous shark attack? How do I know if they really want that engraved casserole dish or if it's something someone's mom just said they should put on the registry because it's practical?
I know what you mean. That's why Zola is so great.
Is that the wedding registry I see ads for on the subway when I'm trying to avoid eye contact with strangers?
Yes, exactly. Zola is the ultimate wedding company that organizes all of your registries and includes over 500 top brands and 50,000 gifts, experiences, and cash funds. On Zola, brides and grooms can register for a crock pot or a shark-free honeymoon activity all in the same place. And couples can leave notes about why they put each item on their registry so guests can rest assured each item or experience is exactly what they wanted.
Good, because I'm pretty sure my cousin regifted me an antique apple peeler I got her from her registry last year. I would have bought her something else if I knew she wanted it only because it looked cool on her Pinterest board.
Zola is also one of the top-rated apps for iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. And because I'm a responsible adult, I can now buy the shower gift on my phone during my walk over to the bridal brunch.
That sounds great in theory, but I feel like my parents and their friends would be really confused by something like this.
Zola's amazing customer service team is incredibly patient and helpful. They're basically grandmother approved.
I'm on the app right now. This is amazing. There's even a group gifting option on here for guests to go in on a joint gift. That's so smart. No one wants to be the Venmo guy anymore.
Yeah, by the way, Matt, I'm still waiting on your Venmo payment from the last wedding gift we went halvesies on.
To sign up with Zola and receive a $50 credit towards your registry, go to zola.com/martinis. According to the Los Angeles Times, he testified that, quote, he and Schwartz were the primary characters in an elaborate role-playing game she invented called Underworld. Clara played the overlord, Lord Chaos, and House acted as an assassin assigned to kill old guy, Clara Schwartz's father.
I mean, you could have thought of something even better as for, like, old guy. She's Lord Chaos. What about, like, slave Jacobin? That's cool.
Oh, okay.
That's fucking cool.
Let's trademark that and get
slave
that in the
system. Jacobin?
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought of it.
Darren, that's
thanks, Matt.
And that's why you're on the show.
Maybe Darren needs to
make her own game.
Something is in these martinis.
I know something. I don't know what's in this pumpkin martini, but we're both a little bit.
Jacobin.
Jacobin.
I like it, I have to say.
Thank you.
I think we need a martinis and murder board game, though. Let's get that on the books.
Oof, yes, Mattel. Get on
listening?
That.
At one point, according to the LA Times, Clara asked him when he really would kill her father, but he never followed through, he testified. So she's basically playing this game with him, and she's like, by the way,
P.S.
the game's saying you got to kill the dad.
It's like Jumanji. It's right. Like, you got to do what you got to do.
The prosecutor told Snap she gave him a book about poisons and said that perhaps he could use poison to kill her father because that it was hard. Oh, because that way it was hard to trace. Again,
correct me if I'm wrong. Was it a pumpkin martini poison?
Because something's going on with our system right here on the end of the show. He told the jury that he quickly broke up with her after this. Kyle was brought to the stand next, but he pleaded the fifth, which I think is an interesting point. Michael was awaiting trial and didn't testify against Clara either. However, Katie had taken a deal and she did testify. While many of the instant messages gave some insight into the discussions that happened leading up to the murder, they didn't tell everything. The prosecutor continued, Clara said she didn't like talking about this kind of thing here on the computer and that they could talk about it later. Which, okay, I think that's a certain fairness and like you're not trying to get caught. It doesn't help you. It doesn't help your case that you're trying to hide something. Here,
yeah, and talk about it in person.
Right.
And whenever anyone's like, "Well, offline about yeah. that," I'm like, "I'm in trouble."
I was trying to get to that.
Something's going on.
I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Like Lord Jacobin must
kill
my
Jacobin.
Father.
It's Jacobin.
We have to talk about in person, but not text about or
Matt,
chat.
I think we're going to get to this a little later, but you're interrupting a lot today, is he not? John?
I think, and we have some feedback about
Jacobin
that.
Jacobin needs to sit over there, slave Jacobin, and just enjoy his fucking martini that we allow him to have.
There you go.
Thank you.
Katie claimed that's why they went to visit her in college, which was to plan. Before the killing, Clara sent Kyle a check to cover his expenses. The prosecutor said Kyle had said that he needed to purchase what he said was a do-rag, something to cover his head and some gloves so that he wouldn't leave any hair evidence at the scene.
What if we had Matt wear a do-rag every day? Good or bad? Let's vote.
I think things are scary enough around here as it is. I think we should just keep things.
You don't think the do-rag would just add?
It might be a little much.
For slave Jacobin to be in a do-rag? Okay, just me then.
I can definitely serve your drink smeared the rim in my do-rag.
And
that's the second
case.
Time, and the third time is a third strike and you're out,
that's
basically.
Right.
Yeah. When the defense presented their case, they talked about more than just the alleged abuse. It turned out the investigators went into Bob Schwartz's computer. They found child pornography, photographs of a young girl in various states of undress. According to the Washington Post, Clara Schwartz's attorneys presented the evidence that detectives determined that hundreds of pornographic images of preteen girls had been downloaded on her father's computer.
I mean, that's pretty damning evidence to me, although that doesn't necessarily correlate with him being an abuser or B, a justification for killing someone.
Totally.
But I see what the defense is trying to do here, not paint Bob Schwartz in a great light. So here's the result. Clara's defense was said that it was Kyle's fault and he had gone off on his own. A prosecutor said, you can see clearly that he's a disturbed guy and clearly this was his idea. He took it upon himself to save this poor abused girl. Remember, he was like saving this fair maiden, this damsel in distress.
Fair maiden, yeah.
Her defense had presented her father's child pornography and claimed Clara was actually abused. According to the Washington Post, the prosecution called Clara's sister Michelle to the stand to counter the claims of abuse. When asked if her sister had ever complained to you about physical or sexual abuse by anyone, she replied, no.
Interesting.
Also from the Post, she also testified that the first time that Clara Schwartz mentioned any suspicions about their father poisoning food was December 19th, a day before the taped interview with investigators. Michelle Schwartz also testified that several people, including her sister, had access to her father's computer, which was not password protected.
Which I think what she's trying to say here is that
maybe
it could have been
upon him from him.
Right. Or anybody else who could maybe be trying to make it seem like he was this type of person.
And for him being the type of guy that we know, obviously very educated.
Yeah.
I feel like the number one rule if you're going to have child porn on your computer is probably to have it be password protected. But I don't know. So that seems like a big misstep on his part. Clara was convicted of being the mastermind behind the murder of her father, Bob Schwartz. She was found guilty of first-degree murder and conspiracy. According to the Washington Post, she was sentenced to 48 years in prison. Mm. Not a lifetime, but good chunk of it.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Also, according to the Washington Post, Clara's sister and brother both testified that no sentence, no matter how severe, could bring justice. Clara's sister said she was haunted by nightmares of her father's last moments and that the sight of a knife makes her uneasy. Her brother said he thinks of his father's death and her sister's role every
How could you not? Yeah.
I mean, is this going to plague the whole family?
Right.
According to the Post, Kyle pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and was sentenced to life in prison. Michael pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and was sentenced to 18 years in prison for driving Kyle to Clara's dad's house. Katie pled guilty to accessory after the fact and served a year in jail.
I just want to reiterate this really quickly. Michael pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and got sentenced to 18 years for driving Kyle to... That's crazy to me.
Well, because, you know, you're aiding this guy in the horrible... But yeah, like just... Well,
and not only that, but after you know that this person went with this fucking sword and stabbed somebody, then you're going to just drive away. You're not going to say like, oh shit.
Right.
You know what? Fuck this.
Let me call the police.
I'm going to actually go in and see if I can like revive this person or, you know, help him.
No, I hear you. That's totally true.
It's terrible. Anyway, so this is a truly tragic and horrific event for any family to go through. It's just, it's horrendous. And I know we talked about JFK last week and then we have this week and it's just like, ugh.
Yeah, that's true.
All
the family situation. That's true.
Yeah. So that's her story.
Well, let's move on to our listener shout outs like we do every week here on the show.
Yes. Ashley on Twitter says, finally listening to Martinis and Murder this week. Oh my God, we have to see Matt the bartender breakdance. Maybe you guys can too. Matt, anything that you have to show for it?
Oh, I can do that. Well, stay tuned for a special video.
I was just gonna say, tune in to Matt the bartender on Instagram because maybe we're getting
something. And before you get to this next one, I wanna update you with a live tweet that we just from @LadyLincoln14. Listening to the new episode of Martinis and Murder, and I'm just a little confused. @JThrasher and @CarpeDarren, when did the show get a new third host? Matt seems to be getting pretty comfortable interrupting and adding his 2 cents. Know your role, Matt. # know your role, Matt.
That's a good one.
I'm adding that hashtag in because I feel like along with yellering, this needs to be added into our repertoire.
Yeah. Matt, do you have any comments on that?
#yellering.
Okay. Yeah, #yellering. I think we might have taken it a little too far by giving Matt a microphone.
I think so too.
You know, so maybe we'll revisit that maybe after, you know, a couple months. Yeah.
John, I'm going to extra smear the rim of your next week.
Matt's done.
Just so you know.
No, that's the third time you are no longer allowed to speak on the show for using the word, I don't even want to say it, smear. Ugh, so gross.
Rim.
Let's move on.
Say vagina, John.
No, I'm not.
Okay, fine.
This podcast is dirty and disgusting. Okay, Shmees on Twitter, another name that I don't particularly love to say. She says, or he or she says, love listening to Martinis and Murder on a Tuesday. Carpe Darren and Jay Thrasher, you two crack me the fuck up. You have a true way of telling the story of those who no longer have a voice.
What a nice thing to say.
#CheersBitches. I always love a good these hashtags.
Me too.
#MyMartini. #MartiniTalk.
Thank you so much. I also love that you cursed.
What's that?
I'm all about the cursing.
And if you didn't know that about Darren, go back and listen to our Caroline's on Broadway show.
Yeah, or don't. That's fine.
Which was very fun for Darren.
We also have one lovely voicemail. This one's exciting.
Yes, this is Amy. Let's listen to this.
Hi, you two. My name's Amy, and I hate leaving voicemails, but I love you guys so much that I just had to do it and tell you guys how much I love your show, and I appreciate what you do. It's very entertaining, and I think you guys are adorable. Even Matt, please come to Minneapolis. I would totally come to your thing if you came to Minneapolis. So please come to Minneapolis. All right, that's it. Thanks. Thanks for doing what you do. Love your show. Bye-bye.
Amy, thank you so much. Yeah. I hope it's not too cold in Minneapolis. Ugh. I know we want to get out there. Maybe in the summer.
Yeah, I know.
Spring.
A lot of fans have been asking us, oh, come to this town. We've asked you guys to let us know where
we
you
got
are.
Some Boise recommendations. Oh, I would love to do a little cross-country tour.
I was just going
to
say, you know, I was at CrimeCon last year. You weren't able to go, although I know you really wanted to. It was in Indianapolis, and that was my first time being in, like, the Midwest, and everybody's so awesome there. Like, you know, we're so used to the New York life of, like, dealing with everyone. You know, the hustle and bustle of New York City. Everyone's angry and on their way here. But everyone was so nice in the Did I say the Middle East? I meant the Midwest. I hope I didn't say Middle East.
I think you said Midwest. I hope you didn't say
I think we might be in danger if we did this tour in the Middle East.
That's true. No, things are not very stable there at the moment.
I don't think they would like us
No, just because the content of our... the smearing and the rims.
Oh, my God. Megan, can you turn Matt's mic off?
Just
is it possible?
Yeah. There it is.
But yes, no, we are definitely collecting this information. Should we go on tour? Should we do other live shows like we did at Caroline's?
100%.
We have that information. So thanks for that tip. I also want to give a quick shout out to, I think her name, it's a name I'd never heard. Is it Castrid? I'm so sorry, Castrid. I don't know exactly how to say your name, but she sent an idea in for a martini recipe on our voicemail. So thank you for that. We'll definitely add that to our Excel sheet, which is full of amazing ideas. We may end up using that one. If you want to send in your martini recipes or leave a message for us, you can call us at 212-664-2072. The information is also in the episode description, so check that out.
Call us, leave us a mail, give us hashtags, tell us how awesome Slave Jacobin really is.
Is that a name you had had in the back of your head, or you just came up with it?
No, I felt like I saw it somewhere, but it's just, you know, it's my mind.
Let's see how this goes.
It's
Let's
my
see how
own
this
version
unfolds.
Of Underworld.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week with an all-new episode.
Yeah, enjoy those leftovers.
Bye.
Bye.